Where are your levels? There you are. Testing, 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 testing. I'll just wear the headphones for a second, and then I'll take them off, so don't, but just to make sure that you sound not too far away, and not too far away. But this is quite a good little machine, you know, so It should be good. I tend to project quite a bit. Oh, yes, there I am.
Okay. And so I should speak up?
I'm just going to put the mic closer to you, because I got kind of a loud voice sometimes, and it's sort of... Nobody wants to hear me talk, really.
I'll try not to boom.
Boom. So I just wanted to I'll just intro. Mm-hmm. So, Dykes on Mics, March 2001. Jess Dobkin, performance artist from New York. Welcome to Montreal.
Thank you.
And performance artists, performance art, it's sort of specific in some way, but it's awfully broad in another way.
Mm-hmm.
And... I don't know, it's an old tradition in a way, eh?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's got a bit of a history to it.
Yeah.
But people still are a bit unsure. Performance art, what will it be?
Right, and in a way that's what I like about it. You know, and people are like, oh, you mean you dance or you do theater? And they want to try to categorize things. And the thing I like about being a performance artist is that a lot of those categories don't exist. And so there's the element of, you know, it kind of is so open-ended. It can really be anything you want it to be. And it kind of feeds into like the themes that I like to deal with of fantasy and of like imagination and things like that.
Yeah. Fantasy and imagination.
Mm-hmm.
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 So you performed last night, and I'm glad that I saw it before talking to you, for sure, because
mm-hmm.
for exactly those reasons. It could be anything, and
right.
so what will it be, you know? And in a way, it was you're sort of like the it's almost like a quintessential multimedia.
Mm-hmm.
In a low-tech way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, multimedia just tends to get associated with high-tech stuff, but multimedia,
mm-hmm.
at a base level, is about using a bunch of different
right.
modes of expression,
mm-hmm.
I guess, which is what you do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And I like to keep things low-tech. I mean, for one, just because I don't really have access to a lot of high-tech equipment. And in a way, like, I just like working that way because, again, like, I like work that's kind of about, like, working with what you have available to you and not kind of being intimidated or, you know, feeling like, you know, oh, well, I don't have, like, that big expensive, like, you know, video this or, like, CD-ROM that or whatever that then kind of, like, you know, sometimes can make people be, like, get discouraged and feel like, oh, well, then I can't really do anything. And so I kind of like to do things with very limited equipment and to be able to be like, oh, you know, in a way it's kind of more challenging for me, and like I find that more even comes out of it of like kind of working within like, you know, these parameters to kind of like figure out how you can like push the materials that you do have. So
absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's easy to be seduced by high tech stuff and button pushing, and
mm-hmm.
I tend to be a bit cynical because I do work in that
mm-hmm.
in that field, and I get bored really easily at
mm-hmm.
At the use of a lot of effects,
mm-hmm.
because I know that it's about button pushing, but if there's no context, if there's no
mm-hmm.
content, it just, who cares?
Mm-hmm.
Who cares? So, I mean, what a show like yours is about, ultimately, is content, because while you've got a lot of props,
mm-hmm.
well... if you're not doing anything with the props, it falls pretty fast.
Yeah,
I would think.
Yeah.
You know, Christmas
yeah.
lights and all kinds of lights and some music and
mm-hmm.
and just beautiful paper mache
mm-hmm.
items.
Mm-hmm. And I like things like I just like to make things that are nice to look at. You
mm.
know, like I'm just kind of into, you know. And with that too, again, it being like, you know, like it being low tech, I think that the objects that I make are also kind of considered low tech. They almost look like, you know, a fourth grader, you know, or just like a little kid had made them. But again, that way I don't feel like I have to get so wrapped up in, you know, oh, this donut, for instance, this paper mache donut, you know, is it round enough? Is it, you know, do those really look like sprinkles on top? Is it the right color pink? You know, and not worry about that. I'm just, like, so much more interested in just kind of, like, producing this stuff and kind of getting a sense of what it is and not having to worry so much, because I feel like I could easily get bogged down in being, like, really, you know, a perfectionist about the details and stuff. And I guess the other thing I like about it is that I feel like the papier-mâché and working low tech kind of gives a rest to the eyes in some way. Like, I just feel like, even though there's a lot to look at, it's kind of, I just feel like when I'm walking around in the world, there's just so much like stimulation, you know, and there's just like, and especially with like high tech media and stuff, that I kind of feel like, just even like in a physical way, just to kind of like look at, you know, a big pink piece of paper mache is kind of like almost a little soothing or something, or kind of comforting. Like, oh, okay, I know what that is, you know, and that's
paper mache. We did that in school.
Yeah. And then just like with a little twist on it, I'll just kind of put like, you know, a nipple on the top of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So let's go into the content a bit. The donut story. That's there's a denial thing. It's got denial worked in there. And yeah, what about that?
Yeah. I mean, I guess like with most of my work, it comes like most of it's autobiographical or like loosely. So, not necessarily my denial, but the denial that I, you know, have, you know, had to confront in the world, and in my family. And so the work is very much just kind of about like a story, like my own stories or stories that I make up, and you know, I feel like that's what I can speak best about. So and in making things really personal, I do find that it, you know, people kind of take what they will from it. You know, some people will really relate to certain parts of it, some people will not really relate to it but be like, oh, that was colorful, you know, and some people kind of understand some of the other themes that I kind of see underlying some of the fun and fantasy of it, and it's those sometimes more serious themes that really kind of motivate me in creating the work. So yeah, and kind of like I feel like I have these two things going on, one where like I want things to be really fun and like I want it to be all about a celebration, but also not, you know, denying like other more serious like issues that I feel like I'm having to take on and that we all kind of have to take on in the world that we are living in. So even though it's about fantasy, I feel like it's also kind of about being, you know, somewhat grounded in reality too. So
yeah, it's a way, I suppose, of I guess I relate to what you're saying, because I too work with stories. And they do end up being funny, but that's not really my intention. Making people laugh, an excellent thing. For sure. But the real motivation is there's some underlying thing that's really kind of absurd, kind of sick.
Yeah.
Maybe. And what are we gonna do? I mean, let's just have a look at this, and then. It's sort of about acknowledging it, which is the opposite of denial.
Right.
It's not that the situation changes necessarily, but you're acknowledging that this sort of nonsensical sort of thing exists somehow.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and there's all kinds of things in the world to be kind of, you know, really sort of upset about.
Yeah, and I love that tension that exists in stories, like, you know, of the funny and the, like, with the more serious kind of subtext that's there, and, like, that tension, and then also kind of leaving it up to, you know, the audience or whoever, like, how they're going to respond. Like, you know, some people might not be willing or ready or, you know, whatever, to kind of go there and even acknowledge some of the more serious stuff. Like, sometimes people, after I do a performance, they'll just be like, that was just hilarious, that was just funny, you know. And sometimes I'll be like, okay, you know, and not necessarily with the pieces that I performed last night, but with other pieces that, you know, or, that was a funny hat you were wearing. And I was like, yeah, but what I was saying was something else, you know. So, like, I try to kind of bring out those tensions, yeah.
For sure, and as you say, ultimately you put out, and then any particular audience member just either relates or doesn't, feels a button being pushed or doesn't, feels the denial about that button being pushed, or sort of acknowledges, oh, right, okay, yeah. So there's all kinds of things. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, I guess ultimately your sort of responsibility in a way ends at some place between you and them. Somewhere in that sort of space, you know, you've given it out, and it's being received in whatever way that it's going to be received.
And sometimes it's hard for me to let go of that, like trying to control that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I bet.
But And I really like to, I mean, another thing that I'm trying to work with in my own work is the relationship between the audience and the performer. Like, I really kind of, without, like, just kind of, like, bringing people along, you know, and not, like a lot of the work that I do kind of is a little odd, you know, and not wanting people to feel, you know, kind of, like, too separate or distanced from that, but to kind of wanting to, and still kind of working to try to find ways to kind of bring people along into that, you know, and to make them feel comfortable in this strange environment, so that they can too, like, kind of, like, you know, so I can introduce or so we can all kind of, like, take risks and deal with some of the challenges that I think, like, are existing for all of us. And yeah, and so passing things out and that kind of stuff, I feel like, is kind of an effort to kind of involve the audience in a way that doesn't feel like, I also hate performances where there's audience participation that's kind of like, you, get up on stage and, you know, and put on this hat,
right,
and, you know, and I, like,
and
yeah,
that.
And it's like, yeah. And I'm always, like, the one hiding in the back of the theater, don't pick me, like, I just want people to, you know, to feel comfortable.
Well, that's it. And so your participatory games, like the
mm-hmm.
pinata.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you ask for two volunteers,
mm-hmm.
and they just whack the hell out of the.
Yeah,
pinata.
That was beautiful.
And that was very well done last night. And just in general, kind of here, pick an instrument and shake it if you want to.
Mm-hmm.
So you're encouraging participation without putting any kind of pressure on
mm-hmm.
people to do so. And I think people do respond to that in a way, though. I mean, they'll participate a bit more if they don't feel like they're being watched.
Right, right.
You know, they'll shake their shaker.
Right, that's true.
Yeah.
I thought about that, yeah.
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 So, anyway, it's interesting how you do work that,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, in between your performances as well, you're very engaging and vulnerable,
mm-hmm.
as you sort of just talk about who you are,
mm-hmm.
why you're here, and what the next piece is about, and about, oh geez, I'm a bit stuck in this, or
mm-hmm.
or you know, just sort of letting us see how vulnerable you are before you move into the strength that is your piece,
mm-hmm.
you know, which
mm-hmm.
I think is a wonderful sort of what's the word? What's the academic term for that? Juxtaposition, maybe? What is that?
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, I don't know what it is either. I don't know what it is either, but it's good. It's good. I mean, I just think it appeals to me. I find
uh-huh.
I find that it makes such a human kind of. I mean, what am I trying to say? So sometimes people performing on a
mm-hmm.
stage are quite removed.
Yeah.
From the audience and even from who they are in real life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whereas
yeah.
that's totally integrated.
Yeah. And when I do performances in New York and I've organized larger shows where I have about like 10 or 12 women in the cast, and some of the women that I'll like work with, you know, they'll say to me like, you know, well, what's my motivation when I'm holding like the pussy puppet or whatever, you know, and I'm always like, you know, okay, your motivation is just to, like, be you holding the puppet. You know, it's, I just don't really, I don't have a theater background, and
mm-hmm.
I really, like, for me, the idea is always that, that I am, like, that it's me doing the performance, and that I'm not, like, taking on a character or, like, any other kind of persona, like, that I want the performances to be about playing, so I want it to be about, like, you know, my playing with these things. And,
uh-huh.
And sometimes it's kind of hard, too. I feel like there's some balance between, like, you know, showing vulnerability and then also, like, I think just something I kind of struggle with, like, as a woman and as a performer of wanting to be my biggest self, you know, and I really struggle with that, too, and not, like, being too, like, self-deprecating or whatever and being like, oh, yeah, I'm stuck in this because I, you know, and I, you know, I'm kind of klutzy and sloppy. And so it's kind of like I'm kind of trying to... And I think that's just part of where I'm at in my life anyway, too, of just kind of, like, coming into myself in a certain way, but of that balance, too, of being like, okay, it's just me, and I'm vulnerable, and I want to just kind of, like, I want to be taken seriously, but at the same time be very human in my interactions. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, absolutely. I think the trick to being taken seriously is to take yourself seriously,
uh-huh.
but not sort of over the top.
Right. Right.
You know, there's sometimes this, oh, I don't take myself very seriously, so that's a good thing. I don't know about that. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I take myself seriously, but
mm-hmm.
that doesn't mean I'm sort of, that's the only thing that's
going
on.
Right, right.
You know, I'm not perfect.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of the package here.
Right.
Yeah, sometimes I make mistakes and trip and fall.
Uh-huh.
That's the way it goes when you take a risk.
Yeah.
And that's what you're doing on stage every time you perform.
Yeah, it feels like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
And you gave for an hour and a half plus last night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was pretty
the performance intense. Went a little longer than I thought it would. I got a little chatty, I guess. I was so excited to be in Montreal that I just started like, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I told them, they were like, how long is the performance going to be? I was like, oh, probably an hour and 15 minutes. And then, like, I look at my watch and suddenly I was like, oh, my goodness. Yeah, I think I got a little carried away. Yeah.
But, well, and now, you know, there's certainly some boundaries that you push quite intensely.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess one of them... and I guess that depends on what campus you're on, what university
mm-hmm.
you're on, but
yeah.
the lesbian sexuality thing,
yeah.
which last night at McGill went, it was just fine.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in terms of, there was nothing sort of particularly controversial about it.
Mm-hmm.
But as you were also talking about after the show last night, that on some campuses
yeah.
in the States particular, I guess
mm-hmm.
since that's your experience,
yeah.
that does become quite a subversive topic.
Yeah, yeah, and I forget that because I'm really living in my little
yeah.
queer bubble where I am in New York, and which I love. And it's and at the same time, my interest in touring, it started, I started touring like in 1998, and it was a project specifically to bring like queer... art and like lesbian visibility outside of the New York metropolitan area where there is so much going on, and to bring it to communities where you don't see that so much. So when I do go to these other communities where that isn't so out and about and loud, then I am coming up against like some trouble, let's
mm-hmm.
say. And and it's funny because it's really different in different places. You know, I performed in Oklahoma where that brought in a big crowd because there's just so little going on there in terms of, like, you know, certainly in terms of lesbian performance art does not happen too often.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of great dykes there, and I used the word dykes, and they were offended by that.
Oh, wow.
You know, they were like, dykes, like, we don't call ourselves dykes, you know, and that they kind of saw that as a derogatory term. And I, of course, you know, hadn't anticipated that. So they're always going to be like these kinds of things, you know, and then I perform in other places where the audience might be like, not necessarily like so queer, not necessarily so female or whatever, and I kind of like come up against some, just some people who, you know, take issue with what I do.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't find so interesting. What does interest me is the different kinds of responses, like in the lesbian communities that I go to. That is, you know, more interesting to me.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Like the, you know, the Christian right folks are going to, like, always, you know.
That's predictable.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. I don't really care. But when I travel around and there are really different responses among queer communities to the work, that's interesting to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it, how do you find that?
It's challenging just because I don't really know until, like, I'm there and on stage, like, how it's going to go, and if I'm going to be understood, and how I'm going to be understood, and, you know, I often talk about, like, being Jewish, and, like, again, that, too, like, is taken really differently depending on the audience and where I am, and the subtleties of that, like, because I think a lot of it, too, is just about, like, is about my sense of humor and about humor being understood, you know, so it's not just because I'm like saying the word dykes, it's how I'm using the word dykes, and if they're understanding like my, you know, just kind of like the way that I'm using that, or if I talk about being a Jew, like to me that is a really specific like kind of, you know, humor, you know, that, or it's really specific context and stuff, and I always take the chance that like it's not going to be understood, but
mm-hmm.
yeah, or sometimes I'll kind of like, you know, change things around a little bit depending on the audience, because I do want to be understood.
Yeah, that's kind of the point. I mean,
yeah.
ultimately, you are communicating.
Yeah, yeah.
Something.
Yeah.
And if you've got to sort of change a few ways about
mm-hmm.
how you're gonna deliver.
Yeah.
I mean, fair enough. That's
mm-hmm.
kind of your challenge.
Yeah. Exactly.
Every time you
mm-hmm.
perform.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And fascinating it must be to drop in on these points.
Mm-hmm.
In the world.
Yeah.
In the States, I guess, primarily, eh? At this
yeah,
point.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just see what's going on college campuses.
Yeah. And I always do, I always try to do outreach to, like, the queer community outside of the university that I go to try to encourage, you know, lesbians from outside the college to come to the shows, which really makes a big difference and is also like something that's important to me. For me, the performances aren't just about like, you know, the hour and a half that I perform, but I really, like, I'm just so interested in like community and in building community and in a lot of places in the U.S. where there is this like, you know, campus city or town kind of split that happens, and where, you know, the lesbians from the college really don't have any connection to the lesbians outside of the college. And so the performances become an opportunity for, you know, everyone to kind of meet up and usually kind of hang out a little bit after the show, which is what I really like. So I always do like do some mailings and emailings and that kind of stuff to organizations outside of the college community before I get there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So to try to draw a mix of people. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I guess it was a bit of a mix last night.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. It's true. It is different. I guess partly because the students at any given university won't necessarily be from that town.
Right.
They're mm-hmm. from out of town.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or a smaller town in the area. And mm-hmm. so the other dykes that you're trying to bring in are, well, maybe they're not from town either, but whatever. They've been living there in a different way.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, interesting. Tell me, does your name and Annie Sprinkle's name ever get mentioned in the same sentence together?
I don't think so.
No way?
Mm-mm.
Huh.
Yeah.
What do you think of her? I've had the opportunity to see her and interview her many
years ago. Oh, really?
Nice. And I was reminded of her.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah?
With you, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, I think, like, some of the themes that we, you know, are addressing, yeah, I think are similar.
Uh-huh. The way you play with your boobs.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. There was that.
Yeah.
You know, uh-huh. The two boobs hanging out show.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm definitely a fan of her work. Like, I think, like, you know, I just think we need more of all of it. Uh-huh. So, I mean, I think that's the other thing that, like, I'm just interested in is kind of, like, you know, and again, with my work being kind of low-tech, I mean, I kind of want to, you know, my hope is that it serves as some kind of example for, like, you know, that not necessarily, oh, so everyone should go and be a lesbian performance artist and make paper mache, but just to be, like, oh, just do what you want to do, you know, and find a way to do it, like, uh-huh. Yeah, but I am a fan of her work.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those big knockers.
Those big knockers and the way she uses them. Yeah. Very creatively.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. 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 And it was years ago that she did a performance in Montreal, probably 6 or 7. And anyway, one of the striking things about interviewing her, I was thrilled to interview
uh-huh.
her. And she was so open
uh-huh.
and non-judgmental.
Uh-huh.
Like, wherever you were was fine, as long as you sort of kept moving with a certain awareness. But
uh-huh.
wherever you were was just fine.
Uh-huh.
You know? Well, that mm-hmm. was very sort of generous of her. And given the magnitude of her performances and how vulnerable she does make herself. And I guess, you know, when I use the word vulnerable, I'm using it in conjunction with the word strength, because I,
mm-hmm.
I really do believe that when you're vulnerable, you are strong.
Yeah,
it's
absolutely.
Like being honest.
Mm-hmm.
There's just no sort of arguing with somebody who's being honest,
yeah.
ultimately. You know what I mean? It's just the bottom line. You don't have to agree.
Right.
But this is the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. What about your family? Like, what's your relationship with them?
Yeah, I actually don't have a relationship with my family, so...
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I'm not in touch with my family. And, like, and again, I kind of use, like, you know, my art work as a place where I kind of, like, you know, just kind of, like, talk about some of that and think about some of that and just kind of work through some of it. But, yeah, but I'm not in touch with them. Yeah, it's heavy.
That's heavy.
It is heavy.
You were saying last night that you you went to Hebrew school, so your Jewish
mm-hmm.
religious upbringing was quite rigorous.
Yes. Yeah, it was. It was.
And that's, you were obviously living with your family at that time.
Yeah.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
when did that sort of break?
I guess, I mean, in a way, I mean, in the piece about coming out about Christmas, I think that, like, I really... That's been really recent. Like, I really feel like I'm just now kind of starting... I mean, I haven't really been observant as a Jew for a while, but, like, really just kind of starting to explore, like, my own spirituality, you know, and kind of, like... And just kind of, like, looking around and seeing what is making sense for me. Like, I don't think I really was given... that opportunity as I was growing up to kind of make those decisions for myself, and so now I feel like I can and I am, and it's been like incredibly exciting, you know, just to kind of like yeah, figure out like what my own like spiritual life and self looks like. So, and who knew? I mean, that's the other funny thing, I guess, when you start to like explore anything. Like, I mean, I don't know. I was just like, would have never guessed. But then when I look back, I'm like, yeah, I always did want a Christmas tree, you know? So, so now I'm going to get one. And I can't wait. And that's going to make me incredibly happy. So,
right.
It's good.
All
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And not having a relationship with my family has been incredibly painful, but at the same time, like, it's been necessary.
You instigated that?
I don't really think so. I mean, it's because of, it's funny because when people ask me that in a way, and I think that my family would say yes, but I didn't create the circumstances that like required
right.
that separation.
Right.
So
absolutely.
I would say like, yes, like I don't feel like I'm able to like, you know, be myself and have a happy life while having a relationship with them. So I did initiate that, but the circumstances, you know, that
dictated.
Came before, yeah,
yeah,
required that. So,
mm-hmm.
So I put that on them happily. Yeah, finally.
Well,
yeah.
Well, that's intense. That's a major,
uh-huh.
a major sort of schism in one's life. I
yeah,
guess.
It has been. Mhm. But and now that I've kind of like come through it, I just feel like I'm just so happy all the time.
Wow.
Oh, there's nothing like yeah. Finally realizing you've survived something, you know?
Yeah.
And
are you making a living from doing this?
I'm trying.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really interesting because, I mean, one of the reasons that I've always been interested in performance art is because I really, like, reject the whole, like, art market scene and, like, the gallery scene in New York and everything where I am. And I've always liked that performance art is something that's generally not marketable. You know, it's not a product that you can sell. And ironically enough, like, I've found that, you know, at least by going to colleges and universities, I actually can make money doing this. And I really struggled with that for a while because I was like, wait a minute, this is not matching up with my moral values. And then I was like, wait a minute, like, I'm doing what I want to be doing. And all artists should make a living at what we do, you know. I firmly believe that, you know, and I feel like the problem is with the system, especially in the United States, where there is no real funding for artists. So I am able to make some money performing, and then is my lesbian escort service. So, yeah, so that's going to hopefully really take off and supplement my income.
Thank you for reminding me about that.
Yes,
I might,
a little plug for Pandora.
Okay, absolutely. Tell us.
Ladies of Montreal, when you find yourself in New York City and you're alone and lonely, yeah, that's the thing to do is to call Pandora's. The only lesbian escort service in New York, I think that's true. Maybe in the world, I'd like to think. So, yeah, that's kind of another project. It's a business, and I also do kind of think of it as an art project as well as a performance. In a way,
yeah.
So how
is this? How are you setting up the structure for the escort service?
Yeah. Well, basically, I I identified a need in the community. Lesbians in New York, I think, generally speaking, are not having enough sex, and sometimes get kind of lonely. I think I'm my best customer, actually. It's kind of like there's this commercial for like men who like, you know, are losing their hair, and the guy comes on. He's like, I own the company and I'm the best client. Okay, that's kind of like me. So it's just kind of set up, and I'm such a yenta anyway, like just kind of always being like, you know, liking to kind of, I guess being a madam has always been kind of a fantasy of mine. And I've like...
Do it then. Eh?
Yeah, and I've kind of like, you know, had too much like therapy and too much like, you know, working out my problems to actually be a whore at this point, you know? Like, I just don't think I could, and, like, just with, like, the, you know, just some of the stuff and the violence that, like, I've had, you know, on my own body, like, that at this point, like, I don't think I could really, could do a lot of whoring. But meanwhile, my friends all are dying to be lesbian whores. So we've got it kind of set up. And it's a range of services, yeah, from, like, you know, from like erotic massage and just going out. If somebody wants to just go out to a function or to a dinner, phone sex, strippers for parties, for girl parties, and sex. So.
Sex. Yeah.
Yeah.
Was that old fashioned?
Yeah. That stuff.
Yeah. Now, how do you find that, however? I mean, the sex part. Mm-hmm. Lesbians.
Mm-hmm. It's fascinating, I know, because, I mean, it's really interesting. I mean, in a way, like, and part of the other reason I started this, I talk a lot about sex and sexuality in my performances, and also as I've been traveling to different communities and kind of talking with people about it, and I just find that, I mean, for one, it feels like it's an issue that we just, like, talk around a lot. It's really kind of hard to talk about it directly, and, you know, especially, like, I don't know, to me it seems like with lesbians, like, just a community that knows, like, the closet and, like, just shame about who we are and about, you know, about our sexuality and stuff, and then it's kind of, like, hard. That is an added factor, I think, in terms of, like, being able to be open in terms of talking about that stuff and talking about our desires and talking about pleasure and that is a priority in our lives and stuff. So, so the escort service kind of came out of all of that, thinking about all of that, and it has been really interesting. I mean, I kind of think we are of a different nature, you know, like, you know, call me a, you know, old-fashioned separatist. But anyway, I mean, I just feel like it's fascinating. So, like, you know, because I know men will call, like, all those ads in the back of the phone book or whatever, and they'll just, or the newspaper, and they'll be like, great, you know, send her over, you know, whatever. And with lesbians, it's not that simple, you know. They want to know, you know, when they call up, I can't believe I'm saying all this. Yeah, when they call up and they're just like, well, what's she like, you know? I'm like, oh, yeah, you know. And they don't just mean, like, tits and ass. They mean, like, you know, oh, well, you know, does she have cats? You know, what's her astrological sign? These are the kinds of questions that I get, you know. What does she do for a living? And I'm like, she's just coming over to, like, give you a little sexy massage and, like, you know, rub you down. Like, why do you need to know about her cats? You know, it's just really hard, and I find it hard for myself, too, to separate, you know. I mean, and that's kind of an experiment of this, even. I mean, I don't know how well or if it's something that we want or should do or whatever, but to be separating, like, just, like, straight-out sex from, like, the emotional attachment that we find, you know, or from intimacy and all of that, so.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know.
And you're just starting this out, eh? Pretty much?
Yeah, it's kind of new. It's been operating for a few months. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, you're going to, fascinating. You're right. We'll see. Absolutely. You'll see exactly what... it is. It's an art project, and it's a sociological sort of observation, you know, because it is interesting. It is one of those debates that that just kind of, you know, rages on, that women aren't different from men.
Right.
We can, if only the services were there, we would participate like men do.
Right.
To my mind, that's not entirely sort of true, because if the need was that great, there would be the service, because you know, lesbians can be business people too, and so you're embarking on what you see as a potential niche, at the same time recognizing that it's not nearly as clear cut as it is with men.
Yeah,
it just isn't.
Yeah, it's not.
And you know that.
Yeah, and I'm just so curious about it all. So
yeah. Right. But, I mean, it doesn't have to be, like, for men. I mean, women are not men, and so it doesn't have to be
right,
that,
exactly. You know? Yeah, and if anything, I'm just thinking, I mean, that's such a good point. So how, like, what would it need to look like to provide the kinds of services and,
to work, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
why,
exactly.
Why is the male,
it doesn't
male
need
model
to,
the...
Yeah, it doesn't need to, like, replicate, yeah.
We're sort of glorifying this kind of emotionless fuck thing,
right,
you know?
And that's not what I want to do at all, yeah. Yeah, I'm not like, oh, yes, they've got it made. That's a fantastic system of, like, whoring and, like, pimping. Like, you know, not at all.
Fantastic. Exactly. So you've got to figure out your own system. Mm-hmm. Like, what is it that lesbians...
Yeah, what do we want? And, I mean, and in a way that kind of, for me, gets back... I mean, that's why it feels really connected to my work. I'm, like, always asking myself and just asking the questions of, like, well, what do we want? Like, you know, what... Like, how then do we go about creating it, you know? What, I don't know what this will look like, but I'm interested in the process and seeing it evolve, yeah.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The day job as performance. Mm. As a performance, as an experiment.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. That's integrated living.
Yeah, and that's what I'm trying... I mean, as much as possible, that's kind of what I'm trying to figure out at this point is how to do that, the integrated living thing.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I've also kind of cycled and had, like, you know, have a 9-to-5 job and then quit and then, like, you know, have saved a little money, have time to make art, get another job, quit, you know, kind of like that. And for a while now, I've been able to do okay, like, without doing other work, but...
It's tenuous, though.
Certainly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Which is, I know what you're saying. It's a choice. And,
yeah.
You know, which is good to keep sort of at the forefront that you are choosing it. But mm-hmm. it's not to say, though, that it's fraught. It's really tenuous, and mm-hmm. There's not that much security.
Yeah.
It's a lot of freedom.
Yeah.
A lot of flexibility, a lot of time.
Yeah. And also added stress. I mean, I just have that feeling of, like, of being a self-employed person and being like, oh, well, I mean, I've had 9-to-5 jobs, which I've loved because all I needed to do was show up and I knew I would get a paycheck every 2 weeks. And now I feel like I have to make it happen. Like, I need to be really motivated if I'm going to, like, be successful or whatever at, like, you know, uh-huh. getting some cash. But it's so rewarding because I just, like, I mean, I feel so lucky to be doing what I want to be doing. I'm performing, and like last night I just was so excited. I was just like, I was where I wanted to be, and that is just like feels so lucky.
Yeah.
Really lucky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, thanks for dropping by.
Thank you.
And,
thanks, Deb.
Yeah, pleasure to see your performance, and really, really a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks.
Yeah. What was I going to say? Something about Dykes on Mics. I forget. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Dykes on Mics funding drive. Let's see. What could you say? Was there something that you could, like, say? Some kind of, like,
Yeah.
Something
we have
about
to
your
talk
lesbian
about,
money?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are we going to say about that?
Yeah, let's see. Pledge your lesbian money.
Yeah, just, if you're listening to the radio, just take out a clean piece of paper and a pen and just write a, you know, I don't know, put somebody's face in the middle, I guess, usually goes on money, and then just write in some dollar amounts, send it. Oh, but that won't work.
Well,
that won't, like, pay the bills at the station.
That could be the exercise, though, you know, so if you put, like, $1 billion
yeah.
on the bill,
mm-hmm.
call in with a pledge of 100,
mm-hmm.
say.
That
which is,
right.
Which is still actually quite a lot. But okay, but if you're going to write $1 billion, I guess. But
yeah.
But if on your paper you write $1,000, then pledge, call in with a pledge for $10.
Yeah. And do that.
And do that. And
it's
do
so
that.
Worth it.
Dykes on Mics. It's the longest running Dyke radio show in all of North America. And at many given points, it's the only one.
Yeah.
And so...
It's so important. I mean, it was amazing to me, too, like a number of people last night, you know, and I asked them how they heard about the performance, and they said, you know, from Dykes on Mics, and so, yeah, I mean, it's just such a resource.
It's such a resource, and, yeah. And
can't take it for granted.
No. Lesbians with their money pledge
to
Dykes on Mics. So, Jess, thanks again.
Yeah.
Thanks again.
Thank you.
All right.